Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown. A couple of it seems like only yesterday, but a couple of weeks ago, I did an interview with John Richardson. It'll probably turn out to be about 3 years ago now, knowing my lack of time timekeeping, because he was and continues to be an influential. If you know your music, and you know your one of a type bands, your session musicians, then John Richardson is the man, one of the original Rubettes. So I'd say I've got him back on the show. I've got him away from the hot cross buns, and I'm delighted to be joined by John Richardson again. John, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
How are things with you on this? Yeah, it's a strange day, isn't it? Sort of Good Friday, because a load of people take it sort of like, here we go, hunting for eggs or whatever. But I mean, I'm in Spain. It was very somber last night. It'd be very somber today as well, because we have the processions here in Spain today. It's quite spiritual, John.
Well, I think it's wonderful, and I think that's what life is about. The first words of the Vedic literature that I follow says, my dear friend, you have the human form, that its job is to inquire. And, and we inquire what? What am I? Who am I? What am I here for? Where am I going? And I think Lord Jesus gave us a very powerful indictment towards our perfection, our latent perfection, you shouldn't be forgotten.
You see, this is the thing, John, because people might just think, and a lot of people will have, literally be spluttering their hot cross buns across the breakfast bar with that little pronouncement. You see, but a lot of people just think, oh, the 70s, oh, the Rubettes, they were, it's shawaddy waddy, et cetera, et cetera. There was no real substance behind that. But didn't you sort of embrace, where a lot of people ended up as rock casualties and fell off various wagons, you kind of embraced, and not in the kind, because, I mean, if you say sort of Eastern spirituality, everybody thinks about George Harrison, and sort of, if you like, how to put this, rock bands and prog rock bands can get very into spirituality and the path and the way and the like, but, Mud, Shawaddy Waddy, Rubettes weren't supposed to, they weren't supposed to be interested in going on top of the pops and getting into trouble, weren't they? I mean, let's put it this way, I don't think the moral and spiritual rock of Sweet, one of your favourite bands, was particularly strong, and there wasn't a very great moral anchor. Methinks, John.
Well, I'm not here to slag off other bands.
Well, they slagged you off. Sweet slagged you off.
Well, just tell them I love them anyway. We got to work with Sweet quite a few times in our later years, and of course, most of them had unfortunately died by that time. But Andy Scott was still around, and when it comes down to it, all that anger and frustration. It's just coming from dysfunctional childhoods, really. It's nothing more than that, it might seem like the world to them to be angry, frustrated, did this, do that, F that, F this. But one day in the hotel, Andy's neck was bad, and I'm a qualified sort of masseur and reflexologist, all that stuff. So I was doing his neck and, shoulders and making him feel a bit better. And I said, Andy, you're carrying a lot of, if you don't mind me saying so, carrying a lot of anger around with you. And he said, like that. And then I said, come on, just what's going on? I said, what was your childhood like? And then, he was orphaned, and he had a tough childhood, and he's still carrying it around. And it translates into heavy metal and into,
behavior.
I won't go into that. Yeah. We've all got our story, and bless them all. And I've got mine. And but I think that at one point in time, you've got to look at your stuff. And I think Lord Jesus and this beautiful story and this great gift to humanity, you know, shouldn't be over. Just because it's 2,000 years ago, it doesn't make it old-fashioned or inappropriate. It's still as alive as it was then, you know, today.
It's interesting to say about the, music, because I have the pleasure of bumping into, because I used to live down here, Paul and Jenny Cook. And Paul Cook, of course, drummer.
Oh, my God.
Yes, indeed, because they're based down here. And Paul Cook, drummer with the Pistols, you would think that he would be gobbing and spitting and whatever. Nicest people you could meet on the planet, John, they are. They really, you know, great drummer, rubber guy, you know. And so therefore, all that punk energy, and I met them in a well-known department store and they were shopping for, I don't know, ties or something, which is not exactly, because, you know, as Muhammad Ali used to say, we all evolve, John. I mean, Muhammad Ali used to say, my favourite quote to people as I head towards my seventh decade, is the fact that Muhammad Ali said, if you're still chasing the things that you do when you're still chasing the things that you wanted when you're 20, when you're 60, then you haven't evolved as a human being.
Yeah, it was such a wise man, wasn't he, older? And I started to realize how incredible his
ethos?
It was just so right. And at the time, I used to think, go to war. You should be going to war, you know. No, he was completely on the money. You know, why aren't there more Muhammad Ali's around right now, you know, saying, look, you know, we've got the president, we've got the leaders that we've, you know, voted in. And, you know, we're going to have to be accountable. And I think Muhammad Ali was really accountable those times, and how brave for a black man in a unwelcome country, just stood up like that against everyone, and so many people were against him, but he was right all the way through. He was such a champion, and that thing that you just said there is so true. We have to, like, you know, that's the way I am, you know. God, that's a death knell for a soul, you know, to speak like that. What happens is that when you don't work upon it and you just enjoy it as much as you can in this place where it's very difficult to enjoy, you have to come back again and go over all that stuff that you didn't, encompass or didn't face or didn't resolve. And so it goes on, you know, like in my book. I do a lot of work with past lives. Yeah. I've been doing it for over 40 years. And it's just amazing when people start to realize, oh, my God, I'm not this body. I'm not this set of circumstances or problems. I'm this eternal thing that doesn't, that light won't go out as much as we try to put it out.
So when did you sort of first come across this? Because, you know, when did the light kind of go on, as it was, John? I mean, were you walking down, I don't know, Peckham High Street, and suddenly, you know, you had a revelation, as it were?
The kind of bit like that. It was incremental and then sudden. What happened was, I was, you know, like most of us, we suppose, not yourself, you're younger, but post-war people were very poor. And I hated being poor. It was awful. Some or other, I must have been a real, a hoity-toity person in the previous life. But I just didn't like not being able to pay the bills or not having furniture that you could bring a girlfriend around to your house and stuff like that. So when I was 14, I had a dream that I was going to be a drummer. And it was so vivid. It was incredible. Like, I went into being a professional drummer in that dream. And anyway, so that was my burning desire to do that. And I had a milk round, a paper round. I was up every morning about 3:30, working. And, you know, I was happy to be able to do that. And it also pulled my family out of a lot of, you know, tight spots financially as well. Anyway, I was about 12 or 13 when I started that, and 14 when I got the drums. And what happened, I saved up the money, went to Romford, and there was the same drum kit, the white drum kit, in the front in the front window and bought that. Anyway, I worked really hard, went, paid all my dues, worked through all this, the horrible pubs and clubs and punch-ups and everything else that goes with it.
Yeah.
And then finally got to the top of the session musician, which was, I was thinking, there's no way I'm ever going to be a star. That's, you know, it's impossible. And so I thought, well, what's the next best thing? Yeah, become a session musician. So I learned how to read music, drum music.
Yeah.
And I started and I worked my way up through the ranks until I became like one of the go-to drummers that you'd have on your record. You know, played a lot of other records, hit records and stuff. And then Rubaz, as you know, came out of that obliquely. You know, because no one would. I'd played on the Sugar Baby Love recording for, which was meant for Shawadi Wadi. They turned it down. Then they tried Carl Wayne. He turned it down. Then there's someone else. He turned it down. Then they put it out anyway. It started getting a load of plays on the radio, but didn't go in. It was at 51 for weeks. And then
that must be annoying if it's hanging just outside the top 50 at 51. I mean, you know, yeah. They had 50 and a half, you know.
And Robin Nash wouldn't have anyone on Top the Pops unless they were inside the 50. So this town ain't big enough for the both of us.
Sparks.
Just gone into the chart. They booked them. They came over from America. The Musicians Union were very strong in those days, and they said, "Hey, you Yankee, have you got your visa?" And they went, "What's a visa?" You know,
yeah.
And they didn't get a visa, so they kicked them off Top of the Pops. So there they were without an act. There was an act short.
Yeah.
So they called up and said to Polydor, that group, the Rubats, which didn't exist, can they've got Top of the Pops tomorrow? Can you get them down here? So of course they said yes, and they called me up and said, "Look, you played and sang on it. Get a group together for tomorrow." So we came, and we took the whole pee out of the whole thing and took it very lightly. And 2 weeks later, we were number one. And a few months later, 8 million records on that one.
But did you have matching suits for that one? I mean, did you? I mean, because you were a group. I mean, presumably it must be. You must have grabbed it because yeah, okay. You can. This is the biggest TV show. This is the biggest music show in the world, John, and maybe American Bandstand or something, but you know, Top of the Pops is religion. Everybody talks about Bowie in 72 doing Starman, and they say he was talking to me when he looked down, you know, he looked down the TV tube. But that's it's a huge deal. I mean, I think there's a story, I'm not so sure, but you know, talking about Sparks, John Lennon eventually sees Sparks doing that on the TV, and he says, "Look," and he phones up his mate and says, "You've got to put the Top of the Pops on because Mark Bolan's playing with Hitler, so therefore, because of the look, how they looked." But so presumably getting your sort of, you know, four mates together or four system musicians, and then, because you can't just turn up in, because this is showbiz, you can't just turn up like the Smiths in t-shirt
good,
and whatever.
Good question, Giles. We're flying up on our way to White City, passing Oxford Street, and we see I said, "Guys, we can't. We're like, you know, you can't put your jeans and stuff on. Like, we've got to do something presentable." So they said, "Well, what do you suggest?" And then I saw Take Six and I said, "Quick, pull the cab over." So we went into Take Six. Well,
which is for younger listeners, is not take that with, you know, another member. It was a chain, wasn't it, Take Six?
It was a chain, very popular at that time, and of course it's no longer existent. And the Great Gatsby film was on, and the craze was white suits, white caps, brogue shoes, black and white brogue shoes. So I went in and bought six. I had the American Express. I went and bought six and all different shoes and stuff like that. Rushed back, went to Top of the Pops. We did a run through. And then I said, "Look, guys, you can't just stand there singing behind a mic. Got to do something." I said, "Remember the Shadows, you know, with those box steps that they did."
Yeah.
So I got them to do all the, you know, I was the choreographer. And we did that. And I said, "When it comes to the talking part, people, take my advice." I said, "I'm going to camp it right up." And so it was a whole androgynous sort of thing was going on was then. I was still young enough to sort of be interested to both sexes, I guess. So I did a sort of camp talking part, and 2 weeks later we were number one. Anyway, from that,
yeah.
But that first year we had a load of hits. There were three in the top 10 in that first year, and so we had to go on the road, and we had to buy a big, great big Tech and Technicon and a PA and all that stuff. And it was very, we didn't have a manager. So I talked to Andy Stevens, who was the tea boy at that time in Polydor, to do it. I said, Andy, we trust you. Don't trust all these other bastards. Oh, excuse my
Randy. It's quite all right. It's Good Friday. You're forgiven.
Oh, God. Anyway, so we went, Andy took us over, and it took the pressure off us somewhat. But it was on the road when I started to, I was doing some, I won't go into it, quite a lot of nonsense. And every night I'd go back to the hotel and I'd open up the drawer, and there was a Gideon's Bible there. So I started to have a look about, because I felt like I was a bit losing my soul.
Right. You know?
So anyway, I liked what I was reading, and I was, as the years went on, 1, 2, 3 years, I was getting more and more interested in spirituality, and I wanted to become. I thought I'm gonna become a Christian. That's it. So, but there were some things in the Bible that I didn't feel that comfortable with. So, I prayed, my dear Lord, I'd like to become a Christian, but please could you send me a nice Christian to help me to understand what I'm reading here properly? Because sometimes you go to the church and you don't feel a connection with it. Anyway, 3 days later, on the front door,
yeah,
was this Indian man was there. And he said, I understand you're looking for God. So I said, well, yeah, I am. So he said, may I come in? So I said, yeah. So I said, who are you? He said, I'm your next door neighbor. And he was a retired headmaster from a teacher's training college in India, Agra. And he was living there with his son. But because we had these big walls and we had fancy houses, you know, swimming pool, tennis court, the whole thing, we didn't kind of know anyone next door, so to speak, you know, at that point at least. So he came in and he said, at that time I'd started doing healing as well in between tours. I was learning how to do remedial massage and reflexology, and I was studying herbal medicine. And so he came in and I thought, oh, I'm really spiritual already, you know, because I'm really like evolved. I'm doing all these things. I'm good and all that stuff. I've even stopped doing, I won't say the word. He said, would you know about those Krishnas, Hare Krishnas, and Rama and Krishna? He said, well, do you know about Rama and Krishna? And I said, well, I've seen those mad Hare Krishnas on the street. And he went, okay. So I said, may I read to you a book? So he opened up what was the Ramayana, which is the story of Ram's incarnation, Ramachandra. So he opened up the Ramayana. I didn't know what it was, and he read from it. And honestly, Giles, it was just like someone punched me with, I don't know, or hit me with a sack of bricks or something. It was so, and that was, so it was incremental up to that point. And then bang, it was just, I went, this is what I want. And so from that day on, he was my sort of first guru. And he used to come in and teach the kids Indian Sanskrit, and or try to at least. You know, it's very difficult.
Do you have any idea how he knew you were looking? I mean, because you know, turn up and say, I believe you're looking for God. I mean, that's quite. And you are there a verified. You know, you could have been Keith Moon, for goodness sake. You could have been, you know, sitting there with trying to fish the Rolls Royce out of the swimming pool, or, you know, find out why there was a blonde on the three naked blondes on the tennis court. But no, you know, you're there and you're receptive, like Keith Moon. You're there and receptive, and he just decides to rock up. Did he? That's a bit divine, isn't it, John?
Well, everything is divine. Everything is, you know, according to our actions in our previous life, and there will be a corresponding in that life or in the next life, a corresponding reaction. And all this stuff, we set it up. the things that, I don't know if you've ever noticed when you really want to do something or you really think, oh, I'm interested in that, books come or someone says something, or have you ever had that?
No, but if you go online, and it makes me laugh because obviously I'm a dark and twisted little soul, but what makes me laugh is people going about manifest. You can manifest this, and as if it's something new. It's like, oh yeah, listen to my podcast, and you know, I'm talking to you from Southern California, and I can manifest. And it's like, that is basically, you're doing the thing on the same vibration as the universe, because we are all energy. And what happens is when you are in perfect energy, listeners are going to be going, what's Charles going on about? But when you are in perfect unison with the universe, you all vibrate at the same thing. Energy is eternal. It's a circle, and it cannot be created or destroyed. It just keeps going on and on, and that is vibration, and that is what they call manifesting. John?
Right. I agree. But the thing is with manifesting, if it's not in your karma, Charles, you cannot manifest one thing. You can't. It will avoid you. Because it's not meant for you. It's not meant for this time. And you've got, there's another lesson where you've just got to bite on the bullet and go with it. It's like, I've been through some really, really tough stuff. Like when we had the court case with Alan, I personally lost near enough all my savings. It cost me $100,000 and the other boys as well. And it was really, really difficult. But, you know, it was meant to be. It was his day and he was going to have it and whatever. Even we were right or we were wrong, it was supposed to be. And it's no use, you know, crying over spilt milk. The fact is that I had something to learn. And I did, which is, it don't matter. It's okay. No. I'm still around. I'm still doing my thing.
In the autobiography you wrote, which was really interesting because you had a certain well-known figure from the 80s who has also embraced Krishna, and you'd think, hey, he used to be with Culture Club. At the launch of the book, don't applaud George, he'll want paying.
George is such a lovely character, actually. And you know what? He has grown so much. I don't know whether he'd thank me for saying this, but when I first knew him in the 80s, it was, you know, it was still on his stuff and it was all about George all the time. But as he's gone through his various battles, he has become such a sagacious person, very, very wise, very kind and interested in you. He really has turned it all around. It's amazing. And you know what? I, after he was imprisoned, I saw him in this, you know, for that thing that you do those kids. I saw him in the street. I was out chanting with the devotees. And he went, hey, John, how you doing? Oh, George, what are you doing? So he said, I'm out of Nick now. I'm giving an NA talk.
Right.
And I said, well done, George. That's fantastic. And I said, was it tough in prison? He said, no. He said, I'd already cleaned myself up before I went in. So I didn't have a yearning and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But he said the drugs are more available there than they are on the outside. But he was so, he said to me, I've lived in that beautiful Hampstead house he's got there. And he said, for 25 years at that time, and he said, I never ever smelt the roses in the garden until now. I went out one day last week and I just, blimey. This is amazing. He said, so he was opening up what looked like a disaster for him and never come back from. He's come back from, but with the strength, you know. And I think that's it. Or when we want to say, I want to manifest and I manifest this, just go inside and manifest what you have. You know, the nature of a person is their Sat-Chit-Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. That's our default. But the covering that we've got is full of misery and temporality.
The autobiography is called The Rod and the Rose. You see, people would have thought we were just going to talk about like ridiculous flares in the 70s, but there's so much more. John, I've got 40 seconds to the news. We've been talking for a good half an hour. Doesn't time fly when you're having fun?
Thank you so much, John.
Listen, it's been lovely to speak to you again. Have a blessed weekend, whatever you're doing. Every day is a blessing because we're still on this planet. If people want to find you online, it might sound a bit facile, but where can they find you, John?
Well, I'm on Facebook and Instagram. On Facebook, I'm Jayadev, J-A-Y-A-D-E-V. That's my spiritual name from my spiritual master I got initiated with some many years ago. Jayadev John Richardson. So you can get us there.
Right, it's been brilliant to speak to you. John, have a great weekend.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.